some of you may remember a couple of years ago I had written an op-ed piece about this issue. And so today I want to frame it as, does a new boa constrictor threaten the White Mountain National Forest? This is an important event, bringing all of you together to talk about the impact of the proposed Northern Pass Transmission Project, a privately funded, profit-making entity, on public lands in the White Mountains National Forest. Since the fall of 2010, when the path of the Northern Pass was made public, I have been in awe of the courageous and persistent grassroots effort and leadership by so many residents and elected officials here in New Hampshire, from Colebrook to Deerfield, and of the conservation agencies such as the AMC, the Forest Society, the Conservation Law Foundation, to raise serious questions about the impact of this project on the fragile ecosystem of the region. Blogs, websites, op-ed articles, rallies, and even balloons have been used to educate the public on what is proposed, what its impact might be, and what citizens can do to respond directly to those in a position to make decisions about its worthiness. Over 120 years ago, people up and down the eastern seaboard began to feel the impact of the new lumber and pulp industry. Based on a new paper production technology, it took less than 20 years for vast areas of the eastern forests in the Appalachian Mountain chain from Maine to Georgia to be cut down. You all know the result and have seen the appalling photographs, contemporary photographs from the era, erosion, wasteful timber management, loss of stream flow, flooding, and of course, forest fires. Perhaps more importantly, the industry also destroyed the fragile economy of the region. Since the 18th century, the area had been settled by farmers who eked out a living on small holdings, augmented by small-scale activities such as forestry and maple sugaring during the cold months. By 1899, the depopulation of this region was such that New Hampshire Governor Frank West Rollins introduced the festival Old Home Week. Rollins wrote, quote, "I had watched with grave consideration the decimation of our hill towns by drawing away our brightest and best to fields where they thought they had a greater opportunity. And it was in the endeavor to stop this loss and bring back some of those who had gone away that I hit upon the plan of Old Home Week." Just a year later, in the summer of 1900, a minister in nearby Woodstock, just over the mountain, the Reverend John E. Johnson, wrote a pamphlet attributing the cause of the depopulation observed by Governor Rollins to the lumber and pulp industry. He pointed to the destruction of the homesteads in the Pemigewasset Valley by a company he called the Boa Constrictor of the White Mountains. In December of 1900, the pamphlet was published by the popular and widely circulated Springfield Mass magazine, The New England Homestead. On the cover, many of you have seen it, was the lurid engraving of a giant serpent labeled with the words lumber and pulp monopoly, crushing homesteads and forests in its coils. Behind it, the White Mountains were bare, with a grand hotel standing amidst a scenic landscape of tree stumps and an abandoned mill. The image and the text conveyed to a readership far beyond New England that the loss of the mountain forests had a terrible human consequence. Most striking of all is the document at the end. 20 prominent citizens of Woodstock volunteered to sign a letter that they had asked Johnson to write the pamphlet on their behalf and on behalf of the region. Well, here we are today, 112 years later, a group of concerned citizens gathered in Easton, just a few miles from Woodstock and from Benton, where the first lands of what became the White Mountains National Forest were purchased. Our challenge has not changed from that of our predecessors in June of 1900. Area maps from 1914 on graphically tell the story of the painstaking, incremental process by which the National Forest was assembled. And I urge you to see the excellent whitemountainhistory.org website where you can see those maps for yourself. The National Forest Reservation Commission had set aside funds for some 650,000 acres. Landowners, including the lumber companies, were well compensated. By 1915, some 243,000 acres had been acquired, and by 1918, the forest was established. The 1915 map identified the area's two chief resources, timber and its attractiveness to visitors seeking outdoor recreation. Thanks to its hotels, a century of public interest in the natural landscape, a population with time for recreation, and the improving forest reserve area, the White Mountain region had a long-term industry to supplant the short-term destruction by the lumber and pulp interests. Today, as you know, the White Mountains National Forest comprises almost 800,000 acres of stunningly beautiful forest lands, lakes, and mountains, which provide a habitat for plants, wildlife, and humans. It is used by millions of visitors each year from across the U.S. and around the world. As the USDA Forest Service website proclaims of the forest, quote, today the reforested mountains and hillsides supply forest products and provide magnificent recreational opportunities while maintaining healthy watersheds and ecosystems, unquote. Recently, the National Forest Foundation acknowledged the value and fragility of these lands. In 2011, quote, to address the conservation challenges across our national forests, the National Forest Foundation initiated a $100 million treasured landscapes campaign, developing restoration projects in 14 ecologically important and iconic locations, while supporting hundreds of community-based conservation projects across the country. No surprise, amongst that 14 is New England's own White Mountains National Forest. However, in the 1940s, the Forest Service issued a temporary, term-limited special permit to an electric power corporation in order to provide electric power to remote rural areas in this region. The request by the Northern Pass LLC to renew that permit will radically change the scale and character of the current power transmission lines, V-string or not. The conservation and business leaders who sponsored the Weeks Act in 1911, such as the Forest Society, the AMC, the American Forestry Association, the U.S. Forestry Service, and the Boston Chamber of Commerce, were committed to the long-term public good over short-term private gain. What questions would they have asked of this request to renew the special permit? Perhaps they might have asked some of the following. Will the expanded Northern Pass corridors and access roads facilitate the spread of non-native invasive plant species? What impact will the higher voltage power lines have on fragile wildlife in the forest? What impact will it have on tourism, so important to the economy of both the forest and this whole region? Is it worth sacrificing the White Mountains National Forest for an energy source, Hydro-Quebec, and a transmission process, high-voltage power lines that are neither truly clean nor state-of-the-art technology? Will the Northern Pass endanger the security of the grid, the U.S. Electric power infrastructure, everything from online banking to those ubiquitous smartphones? A New York Times article specifically addressed the vulnerability of high-voltage power lines to natural phenomena such as solar storms and the need for a federal policy that will ensure a resilient, secure infrastructure. How vulnerable are these power lines to the terrorists who seem to have the government concerned? And not least, was the White Mountains National Forest created to provide a resource for the personal financial benefit of a few stockholders and investors? Here in Easton, the extraordinary beauty of the results of the 1911 Weeks Act surround us. Its sponsor, John Wingate Weeks, had deep roots here in the White Mountains. Raised on a farm, he understood well the vulnerability of human endeavor to climate changes and the need for practices and policies which conserve precious resources for the long term. He wrote that in addition to accomplishing its primary goals of promoting stream flow and protecting watersheds, the Act would, quote, continue the beauty of the mountain regions, which are visited by millions of people, which beauty, under other conditions, might be destroyed. During his last 13 summers on Mount Prospect in Lancaster, he could watch the slow recovery of the forests, which we must not take for granted today. He reflected, quote, I have not been associated with any legislation since I have been in Congress which has given me any more satisfaction than this. Over Labor Day, our grandchildren listened to Forest Society President Jane Diffley describe the reasons why the Northern Pass Project, as currently proposed, should not be permitted to defile the welfare and beauty of New Hampshire. That evening, they surprised us with two puppet shows, one on Trees Not Towers and the other on how the Weeks Act had resulted in the White Mountains National Forest, a region dear to them as to their great-great-grandfather John Wingate Weeks. If young people like them can hear the significance of what is at stake, then surely responsible adults across New England, including the intended customers for the Northern Pass, can too. Just like the Woodstock Selectmen in 1900, we in 2012 must advocate individually and collaboratively for the public good. Any project which has the potential to negatively affect an area such as the White Mountains National Forest that so many worked so hard to assemble and conserve over so many decades must be held to the highest standards of scrutiny and accountability. It is incumbent upon all U.S. citizens to study what's proposed and to express their views in writing. At his funeral in 1926, John Wingate Weeks was eulogized as follows. Men of his caliber are like great forest trees. We do not know their size until they are down. Let us hope that those in a position to do so will ensure that the public lands of the White Mountains National Forest itself do not suffer the fate of the great forest trees of the past through the agency of an ill-conceived private utility project. How could we as citizens forgive ourselves if we realize too late what we have lost, perhaps not to be reclaimed a second time? Thank you.